From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hi, this is Brandi McDonald, entertainment writer for the Oklahoman and News OK, and I'm here with George Lang. And we're talking about the movies that are opening this week in Oklahoma City theaters, for better and for worse.
Yes.
And let's start, on that note, let's start with George, who's going to talk about Miss March.
Okay, well, you know, I tend to go to these, you know, the sort of neo-frat sex comedy type things. And which is, you know, I don't know, that's not something that I mind in this Apatow era. It's no big deal. But I went into Miss March with higher hopes than I walked away with.
Aww.
In fact, I was kind of bereft of hope after I saw the movie.
It killed a piece of your soul, in other words.
Killed a piece of my soul.
Oh, great.
You know, it's out there somewhere, lying in a heap. Anyway, okay, so this is the film debut from Trevor Moore and Zach Cregger. These are the guys who founded The Whitest Kids You Know, which is a really good sketch comedy series on IFC. They've got sort of a major cult following, and they're genuinely talented guys. But this movie is not up to what they do, you know, on their day job. Basically, this is about Tucker Clay and Eugene Bell, who are played by Trevor Moore and Zach Cregger, who wrote, directed, and starred in this thing.
It's kind of a two-man show, huh?
Oh yeah, they forged their personalities pretty early. And they're played by kids at this point, where a search through an older brother's room yields a stack of Playboys, and they end up with opposite reactions. Tucker gets really sex crazed, and Eugene ends up on the other end of the spectrum, and he becomes an abstinence-only educator throughout high school. He and his girlfriend Cindy, who's played by Raquel Alessi, they go around to grade schools and scare kids. Anyway, then, you know, this freak accident, I won't tell you how it happens, sends Eugene into a 4-year-long coma. And when he awakes, he finds out that Cindy is now a centerfold. She has been, she's like the latest playmate in Playboy. So basically, this is a Jay Giles Band song come to life. What happens? Well, you know, Tucker, you know, at around the same time, he runs afoul of his girlfriend and her brother, who is a firefighter. And so, you know, so every fireman throughout the Midwest is after Tucker at this point. And so Tucker and Eugene set out for Los Angeles to the Playboy Mansion, where they're going to confront Cindy, and I assume, you know, Tucker will fulfill some, you know, some lifelong dreams. Okay, let's just say that this is the kind of movie that really goes too far in terms of the shock value. And I'm not easily shocked, but, you know, and I can laugh at some pretty disgusting things, but this thing makes fun of people with epilepsy.
Charming.
You see some gastrointestinal disasters. And I'm being colloquial here, okay? Euphemistic.
Yuck.
All right. Gastrointestinal disasters, and it's vivid.
Yuck.
Okay?
Stop.
Really vivid.
Stop. You can stop now.
All right. Well, you know, and
but they don't stop. That's the point.
But they don't stop. And it's just a lot of just bad taste all around. The thing is that it's just not executed very well. And you just feel you feel like you are sitting next to a couple of really immature teenagers on a subway. You know, that's how I felt for the whole 90 minutes that I was watching this thing. Now, you know, it has some, you know, like I said, some talented people. I think that these guys have real potential. You know, but they just need a different movie. Craig Robinson, who's, you know, from The Office, he has this sort of showcase role as a Dirty South style rapper, and he's got this ridiculous stage name that I couldn't say in print, I can't say it here. Just go to IMDb, you'll figure it out. That name is used over and over to diminishing comic effect, but you know, that's what kind of an operation we're in here. You just get overwhelmed by bad vibes, misogyny, really, you know, misanthropy. I mean, this is the kind of thing where, you know, you just wonder if these guys, if they even like people.
Why do you hate humanity?
Why do you hate humanity so much? I wouldn't want to be either of these guys for the way that they make insult firefighters. You know, you got houses, I'm sure. You want to be protected, right? Don't do this. I'm not going to go into it, but just don't do this. Don't do it ever again. I hope your next movie's better. I gave this 1 star. And I was really just feeling kind of charitable because I genuinely kind of like these guys. But, you know, but this is really not worth your time at all.
So you think it's just better to just listen to the J. Geils Band song Centerfold, which is many 80s internet stations you can find those. At least that would be free.
I don't think I've actually listened to that song all the way through in about 25 years. But, okay, if you have to do something.
There you go. Or you could just watch Whitest Kids You Know. I mean, you could just watch it.
And that's out on DVD, and it's pretty entertaining. And they have some clips on YouTube, which you might want to check out before you go there. Just so, you know, let the buyer beware. But yeah, they do better stuff on their own. This isn't what you need to be doing.
All right. So waste now, time with something else.
Look, there's better things to do this weekend too, and you've got a great one that's showing at the museum, right?
Yes, I do. This is not the first time the museum has saved us from utter depression, so I'm really glad for their film program at this time. But what I have here is the documentary Been Rich All My Life, which is was kind of in the vein of Young at Heart, was something that was sort of like a documentary on elderly people still doing something artistic, but without being really cute and, aren't the old people sweet?
That was a great documentary.
You know, that was a great documentary. This is along kind of in that same vein, but it goes along with the exhibit that the museum has going on, the Harlem Renaissance exhibit, which is painting and sculpture and photography from the 1920s and 30s, sort of the time whenever there was a lot of really rich and diverse creative expression going on down in Harlem, particularly among the African American community. So this is kind of goes along with that exhibit that they've got going on. But it was directed and produced and edited, and cinematography, everything was done by Heather Lynn McDonald. She's a New York-based filmmaker, and it's a very sort of uplifting story told in this very affectionate tone about these five feisty senior citizen who refuse to let bum hearts or bad knees or broken hips stop them from tap dancing. And it follows this group called the Silver Bells. They're a New York-based dance troupe, and it's five former chorus girls who first met in the 1930s. During Harlem's heyday, they danced at the Cotton Club and the Apollo Theater and all these famous venues, and they backed up the headliners, people like Cab Calloway and Duke Ellington. One of them kept up a long sort of letter-writing relationship with Louis Armstrong, kind of things like that. One of them talked about cooking backstage with Cab Calloway, because this was during the time when segregation was still around, so whenever they went out on the road for road tours and things like that for the USO, stuff like that, they didn't know where they'd be able to eat.
Right.
So she talked about cooking backstage with Cab Calloway. So they knew a lot of people, but they were kind of these chorus girls were kind of the glue that held things together. I mean, the headliners kind of came and went, but the chorus girls were there every day. I mean, they worked 7 days a week. So it kind of harkened back to these days, but after the kind of the big band bust in the late 40s and in the 50s, they all kind of went off and got, you know, day jobs. A lot of them worked as bartenders. They started families, things like that. But in 1985, they reunited as this group, the Silver Bells. And they spent like the next 20 years dancing together. And they would play these like packed houses.
Yeah.
Because nobody did this sort of old school jazz style tap anymore. Mm-hmm. One of them even became a dance teacher, things like that. But the film basically follows these women for 2 years, and it starts in 2001.
And old are they at this point?
And whenever it starts, one of them is in her 90s. Bertie Lou is in her 90s. The rest of them are all in their 80s.
Wow.
Whenever it starts following them. Bertie Lou, she doesn't dance anymore, but she was the dance captain at the Apollo Theater back in the day. So she sort of coaches them.
Right.
Coaches the other four. And then the other four just, you know, they continue, and it's really great watching them dance. I mean, there's lots of shots of them dancing, and they're just hoofing it. I mean, they can't They can't kick as high and things like that, but they still have lots of style. They're very savvy, and they flirt their way through these performances like they did whenever they were younger women.
I mean,
it's great.
Sure.
And so they draw these really packed and appreciative crowds, but in kind of a short time frame, they are faced with some of these harsh realities of aging. Bertie Lou breaks her hip. She has to be put in a nursing home, and she's sort of this fiercely independent person who suddenly her independence is threatened. One of them, Marion, starts having these dizzy spells, and she has to have a pacemaker put in. And then one of them, whose name is Cleo, tumbles down a flight of subway stairs, and she breaks her knee, she breaks her arm. She's going to have to relearn to walk if she ever is going to dance again. And so they kind of is brought into question about whether or not they're going to be able to keep going and keep dancing, and I won't give it away and tell you how it went. But, I mean, these are really determined women. I mean, these are women who are, to them, this is their art, and they want to keep doing it for as long as they possibly can. And so McDonald's really good. She doesn't let the story get really syrupy or maudlin or anything like that. But it is only 82 minutes. I would have liked to have spent maybe a little bit more time with them and gotten to know them a little bit better. But, I mean, definitely worth seeing. The stories are worth telling. I gave it 3 stars. And you can see it at the Museum of Art on 5:30 and 8 Friday and Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday. And Heather Lynn McDonald, who actually was the director and producer, will be there after the Saturday screenings and after the Sunday screening to do, like, Q&As.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's very cool. So you can meet her and ask her questions and talk about the film. Like I said, it's a really great film. And if you are at all into documentaries, this sounds of any interest to you, this looks like your best option if you want to catch a movie.
Right, right.
So, because we're going to go on with some other things, but they don't look that promising.
Well, what we have left is sort of like, you know, varying degrees of the wagging finger of shame. The new sort of, we'll say, reimagining of the 1970s Disney series of films, the Witch Mountain series. It's called Race to Witch Mountain. Was not screened here locally, but it was screened nationally for our friends at the Associated Press. Christy Lemire wrote a review, did not particularly care for Race to Witch Mountain. Now, you know, I'll say that I was the target audience for the original ones, Escape to Witch Mountain, which came out in 1975, and Return to Witch Mountain, which came out 3 years later. And so, you know, I grew up either seeing it in the theater or seeing it on the, you know, the wonderful world of Disney on Sunday evenings. This was good entertainment for little kids at the time. But it's been brought, the concept has been brought back. It's basically about a couple of orphaned siblings, a brother and sister, who show up on Earth, and they've got these psychic powers, and they're trying to their arrival is they're on a mission that is crucial to the survival of their planet. What we have here is Anna Sophia Robb, who we've seen in Bridge to Terabithia, and because of Winn-Dixie, she's about, 15 now, I think.
Yeah.
And Alexander Ludwig, who are playing Seth and Sarah in this particular one, and they appear in the backseat of a taxi cab in Las Vegas that is being driven by The Rock. Yeah.
Not A-Rock. Dwayne Johnson.
It's definite article here, Dwayne Johnson. And so there, you know, there isn't too much to it. It's basically just them hiding from, you know, government, you know, agents who have nefarious plans, and there's an alien assassin who is coming after them, and there's lots of bombast, and there's lots of blaring music, and there's gunplay, and all kinds of stuff, which you'll love to show to kids. Anyway,
My kid can't live without explosions and car chases. I don't know whose can.
And I mean, there's things to probably keep your attention. There's some decent people in the supporting cast, Dwayne Johnson notwithstanding. Kieran Hines is in it. Carla Gugino and Gary Marshall, and then also you have Ike Eisenman and Kim Richards. Kim Richards was a crush for many of us when we were growing up back in the early 70s.
They were in the original movies.
They were in the original. They were the original kids, and they show up in sort of a cameo here. And time's been kind to them. They both look exactly like they did when they were kids. Taller, yes.
Taller.
Adult, yes. But they're very recognizable. So anyway, it didn't get a great review from Christy Lemire. She gave it 1.5 stars. But I think for a lot of people who are curious about this, the best bet is probably to get the DVDs, because guess what? They're out. They've been re-released. Both Escape from Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain are just out in Disney Classic DVD. So,
but this there you go. This seems like just kind of a blatant effort to, as you talked about, cash in on an old property. And basically, they take it, they ramp up the action like 1,000%, add a bunch of explosions to it, right, and then turn it into another family-friendly vehicle from our friend The Rock, basically.
Because
it doesn't seem like it's about the kids.
Not so much.
Which I think that the first movie was. I mean, I think Eddie George was in the first movie, and we don't do 90-year-old actors anymore. We just don't have that.
Second one, you actually had Betty Davis and Christopher Lee in it. You know, so there was some decent casting in these things. Something to amuse the adults, certainly. But why do it? Well, you know, it's cash.
It's cash.
It's cash. I mean, there's no other reason. There's better versions of this movie that are out on DVD, so there's no other reason to make it other than it's cash.
And for those of you listening at home, George is miming, chewing on a big cigar, and swigging down some scotch.
Some scotch, that's right, because it burns so good.
But I have another one that is a great example of, and for certain, the people who grew up in the 70s, people who lived during 70s, I mean, they're just getting their stuff ripped off left and right.
Because that's right.
The last movie on our list will be a not screened for critics horror remake. Imagine that on Friday the 13th.
I mean,
another horror remake. Who could have guessed?
We just had My Bloody Valentine. We've had all.
Friday the 13th. Which was just a month ago.
I mean, not too long ago, there was Halloween, the Rob Zombie version. Everything is being remade right now, and so naturally we get to what? We get to the last house on the left. Which was Wes Craven's debut.
Yeah, writer-director of it, and back in 1972.
Right.
And Wes Craven helps to basically pillage his own legacy by producing the remake. What are you thinking, Wes? We're not sure. But we're pretty sure.
It's cash.
It's cash. That's right. But we will have a dramatic reading of the description of this for your enjoyment, since we don't have a review to read.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't screen this for us.
Shocking, I know. But here we go. The night she arrives at the remote Collingwood Lake House. See, remote lake house right there. Everything's going wrong. Mary and her friend are kidnapped by a prison escapee and his crew. Terrified and left for dead, Mary's only hope is to make it back to her parents, John and Emma. Unfortunately, her attackers unknowingly seek shelter at the one place she could be safe. And when her family learns the horrifying story, they make three strangers curse the day they came to the last house on the left. This is, and the sad part is that the people who are involved in this, they're not bad people. I mean, you know, they're not great actors. But I mean, it's like Sarah Paxton, who was, you know, from the short-lived TV show Darcy's Wild Life, and she was in superhero movies, so maybe she deserves it. But, Garrett Dillon Hunt, who is from Terminator.
Oh, he's
Terminator,
a great character actor,
Sarah Connor Chronicles, and John from Cincinnati, he plays the idiotic prison escapee who is going to get his.
He's in Life from time to time. Yeah. He's in a lot of good stuff.
But, Monica Potter, who was in Boston Legal, gets to play one of these parents, one of these psycho parents.
So the made-for-TV Julia Roberts, but I'm just saying.
And Tony Goldwyn is apparently still doing the same thing he was when he was the bad guy in Ghost. So he plays the other parent, and they're the vengeful parents.
You mean he's being chased away by stockings?
Actually, I think he's trying to give some bad guys their comeuppance. So, but yeah. So, I mean, but these are not, I mean, Garrett Dillon Hunt is a decent actor.
Oh, yeah, he's a great actor.
I mean,
actor.
You know, why are you here? I mean, you know.
Cash.
It's cash. Exactly. So, that's a depressing way to end that. I don't have a star rating for you because nobody's reviewed it because nobody's seen it, but I'm going to put a frowny face next to it and say it's probably not
good. Okay, take your medicine, kids. Go to the museum. Go see the Harlem Renaissance exhibit, and then see Ben Rich All My Life.
I mean, talk to the director. I interviewed her. She's great.
That's right. Okay, that's it. There's better things to do next week, I believe.
I hope.
Yeah, I've actually got some things in mind. So, for Brandy McDonald, I'm George Lang. Thanks for listening.